Hi, I'm Ken Mingus. This is Mingus on Tech. I'm here with Lucas and Tracy from Computer World. And what we're doing is taking a look at the top news in technology right now, the things that have bubbled up over the last few days. I'm going to start it off because I wanted to tell Lucas and Tracy about something they may not have seen. One of our reporters, Greg Kaiser, had a really interesting story about Microsoft and Windows 10 this week. You know, Microsoft really wants to get Windows 10 on as many devices and machines as it possibly can. It's hoping to get a billion of them by 2018. But what's interesting is that the company's getting really pushy. I don't know whether you saw Greg's story, but with the recent updates they've been putting out for Windows 7 and Windows 8 machines, they're changing sort of under-the-hood settings that make those machines ready to receive Windows 10, even if the users don't want it yet. This has been a big issue going back even to last spring and summer when Microsoft had launched a nag campaign, was nagging everybody. And Greg talked to the developer of a little tool that had been created to sort of stop those nagging messages from popping up on people's computers. You know, Windows 10 is getting a lot of good play. It seems to be a pretty good operating system. I think Microsoft is happy with where they are right now. But what they're doing is they're setting up people's computers so that once we get into 2016, Windows 10 is going to start downloading. And I'm not sure that if I'm a Windows 7 user and I'm not ready to upgrade, that that's exactly the right tack. So I just wondered if you guys had seen that and what you thought about it.
I mean, I saw it, and I'm not surprised by it, but you know, Windows machines tend to have a lot of crapware on it anyways, and just seems like one more piece that's going to be shoved in your face as you're trying to work on your computer. It's what I don't like oftentimes about Windows is that you get a lot of these pop-ups.
Yeah.
And you know, as I'm doing my work, I don't want a window to pop up in front of me and stop what I'm doing. So now that they're even forcing you to upgrade to the next operating system, that's even more annoying. You know, I don't mind an occasional pop-up saying, "Hey, guess what? We have a new upgrade." Every computer does that. You know, even Macs do that. But to have something that's going to force it on you, and you have no you have no option to stay with Windows 7 or 8.1 if you happen to be very comfortable with those.
Yeah, well, I mean, I should clarify. It won't force you to install Windows 10. What it'll do is it'll force the download to your computer.
Right.
And Microsoft's been pretty, you know, upfront about it, saying that this is something they want to do. They want to change it from a recommended installation to something a little more firm. The assumption being that people who may just not have gotten around to upgrading yet will finally go ahead and, you know, hit the button and say, okay, finally I'll take it.
One thing I thought was a little alarming, I mean, did I read this right, is that they're putting it into the system update, so you just think like, oh yeah, I need to update my system to keep it, you know, virus and et cetera. And now it's like in there as opposed to separate message.
Right. Yeah, yeah. What they're doing is it changes some settings in Windows Update, and what it will do is, and this is what's annoying to some people. People, you know, not everybody has broadband. They don't have a lot of bandwidth, and so you may be working on something, and if you've got a narrow pipe for your internet coming into the house, and suddenly you've got this multiple gig operating system that has suddenly decided to download when you were trying to avoid it. Again, you know, Microsoft has said we're going to push this as far as we can. They've already got, I think, about 150 million devices and PCs that already have Windows 10 on it. But the uptake rate has been slowing. That's another part of this, and I think it's one of the reasons they're getting kind of pushy, you know.
Do they have like a breakdown? I mean, some of this stuff is pretty sophisticated, and the guy who's done this tool has had to keep redoing his tool to keep up with the stuff that's going underneath. So.
Yep.
To me, it sounds like the resistors are probably a more sophisticated audience than, like, my mom, who just clicks yeah when the button comes up, right? So are we starting to get into, like, a two-tier system of the resistors are sort of the more sophisticated users who've been able to ignore the stuff or work around it?
Yeah, I mean, anybody that's got this tool already knows that, you know, they don't want Windows 10 right now. They may never want to go to Windows 10. Maybe there are some programs that they've got that only work with Windows 7 or Windows 8, and they don't want to make the jump. And again, they're not going to be forced to. They do have a last option not to install it. But it just seems that Microsoft, in its zeal to get Windows 10 out there as far as possible, might be overstepping some bounds. I've never seen this with OS X. Apple's never pushed an operating system to me. You know, sorry, I'm a big Apple fan.
You ever wait?
What can I say? You know,
you're
going
to continue to get a pop-up window, though.
Yeah.
I mean, whether you if you don't upgrade it, they're going to keep pushing this on
you'll,
right?
Yeah, you'll continue to get nags. Yeah. And because they want everybody off of Windows 7 and Windows 8.
Right.
And they're trying to get everybody. This is more consumery right now because enterprises really aren't going to upgrade until probably 2017, 2018.
Right.
Because they'll have to get out of Windows 7 by 2020. But anyway, I thought it interesting, you know, so if you're a Windows 7 or 8 user, you might want to keep an eye on your Windows updates and make sure you're not getting Windows 10 before you think you're going to get it.
Is there like a time frame? I mean, it looks like what Greg is saying is they're sort of moving towards some kind of, do we have like a date for next year where like watch out, all this stuff is kind of coming together, or we're still
No, not yet a date. They said early 2016. So I would say once we get past the first of the year, you might want to keep a very close tab on those Windows updates and make sure you're not getting an operating system before you're ready.
Right. Surprise.
Yeah. So anyway, that's one of the things that I had picked up on this week. Something else I wanted to talk about was, and this has been in the news lately, is the sort of the cross-pollination between technology and sustainable IT, renewable energy. There was a big announcement out of Paris where President Obama and Bill Gates we're talking about, I think, was it doubling money for research and development over the next few years? So, Lucas, you wrote about that, and I was just, I wanted to find a little bit more about what's going on there and whether that's, going to make a difference.
Yeah, and it's a funny thing with clean energy and renewable energy. People really get in an uproar over, oil and clean energy. You'd think it would be an obvious thing, like we want to reduce carbon emissions, but I think people feel like this is being pushed down our throats as well, like we were just talking about with the windows. They feel like there's too many subsidies being given to these companies. Then other people on the side of the coin, people are saying, well, there's not enough being done. So what these 20 countries, including the United States, have agreed to is doubling the R&D money that they're going to put into renewable energy, clean energy. That's going to bring it to about $20 billion. The United States has been putting in about $5 billion to research and development of clean and renewable energy to date. So they'll double theirs to $10 billion. Bill Gates just put out a paper, and he pointed out that clean energy R&D in the United States is 0.4% of how much we actually invest in energy altogether. So it's a tiny slice of the amount of money that's going out there. So Bill Gates put together his own coalition of 28 companies, and they're looking to expand that as well. But initially, 28 companies, and they're going to be putting seed money into various, startup initiatives for clean energy, like flow batteries, for example. And flow batteries are just different from, not to get too deep into the weeds, but they're different from lithium-ion batteries in that they can scale a lot larger than lithium ions.
Just to pick up on that for a second, isn't the whole issue right now storage of energy? I mean, we know how to generate it with solar and wind and water and, of course, fossil fuels. But the storage technology, I've seen a lot of stuff with Tesla and the home batteries and things like that.
Well, you're just talking about your solar panels, right?
That's right.
I just had solar panels
installed.
That's right. You're leading the charge.
Of course, my utility hasn't come over and switched out my meter, but, I'm going to probably wait 3 months for that to happen. But, I just had solar panels installed on my roof, and I'm looking forward to having my power bill cut in half. So,
you really want the battery, so that when power goes out, you have your backup.
Do they install a battery?
No, I didn't get the backup battery, even though I got this particular system from SolarCity, which is owned by Tesla's. They're not actually, they're connected by blood rather than actual
like
business.
Like a subsidiary?
Right.
Or?
No, it's actually Elon Musk's cousin, who is the CEO of SolarCity, and then Elon Musk, I think, is board chairman
of SolarCity.
They're
literally related by blood.
So they're, literally related by blood.
All the family,
And I thought about getting one of the batteries. The battery I would really want is the one that can sustain energy over time, so when the solar panels aren't producing energy, the battery is giving power to my house.
So you're effectively off the grid. Or close to it.
Yeah, as close as you could be to being off the grid. I can't do that because I'm actually leasing these solar panels. I didn't buy them outright, so that doesn't allow me. I pay per kilowatt of power that is generated from the solar panels. I have a set amount that I pay, which happens to be 12.5% per kilowatt.
Is that
the battery is the part right?
Battery storage is huge to renewable energy because obviously it's intermittent. I mean, it's not a steady flow of energy when you have solar panels that don't make energy at night, for example, or you have wind turbines that don't turn when there's no wind. So you have to have something that can store the energy and release it during down times. And that's where the energy storage comes in. And lithium-ion batteries, that's the common source right now. Tesla is building a gigafactory and planning to build more that is going to produce these lithium-ion batteries specifically for businesses, utilities, and homes that will store that energy and then release it in off times when.
Do you know, is the R&D money that Gates and Obama and the other tech firms have, are sort of working on, is that related to batteries? Is it related to all kind, like energy generation as well?
Or? It's related to energy generation as well. One of the technologies that they're putting seed money into is called solar paint.
I love this.
I want
solar
that. I want solar paint on the
also,
house.
Also, what a great band name, right?
Yeah,
solar
right. paint. It's based on quantum dot semiconductors. And basically, you have these microscopic semiconductors.
It's in the paint, right?
It's in the paint, yeah. Okay. And basically, you paint a wall, you attach some wires to it, and it produces energy through photovoltaic,
awesome.
Yeah.
Well, okay. And you've written about the glass, right? So the windows will actually, which just seems so brilliant, right? There's the sun coming through the window.
They're not high efficiency. So especially with like windows and probably the solar paint will be as well. But it subsidizes. So you're going to have windows in buildings. The other thing that these windows do is they provide a certain amount of shading so that you're also not paying for additional cooling through sunlight coming through and heating the building. So it actually keeps the building cooler as well. But even if it's like 4%, you're gaining something from it. You look at New York, you have tens of thousands of buildings in Manhattan, for example, with all these windows. Millions of windows that could be producing energy.
Yeah.
My son was showing me this really cool thing. I think it's a Google project where they map out they use Google Maps on the city roofs, and with the sun's, they identify the roofs of the different buildings where a solar panel would make sense, then other ones where it doesn't. So you can just mouse over the thing and go, oh, look, this building could have a solar, which is such a cool use of the technology.
It's most of the solar companies are using that now. They use Google Maps and other algorithms to discover, the best place to put the solar panels on your house. They actually show the trees around your home, and they'll show throughout the day where that shade goes on your roof.
Yeah. Did they do that for your solar panels?
They did, yeah. They actually showed me, it's a virtual map of my house, and they show the trees around it, and then they hit an icon, and it shows the 24 hours in a day where the shadows of the trees come around.
Well, they need to know that if they're going to know how much electricity is going to be generated, right?
Right, exactly. And they actually use that to determine if your house is efficient enough to, or gets enough sunlight to actually produce enough energy to warrant solar panels.
It's interesting, I know that there are tax credits expiring, and that's why there are a lot of homeowners that are doing that, this year. But also, one of the things that came up, Tracy's been working on our Future 2016 project, and one of the things that came up as a sort of disruption for 2016 is this whole idea of reducing like the carbon footprint. Companies are trying to get away from that, right?
Yeah, so I mean, this is our Forecast 2016 survey, which we do every year, and it's a group of all high-tech IT leaders and senior people, so it's not, we're not gathering every opinion. We're getting the eagle's eye view on things, and we split it into, stuff you need to pay attention to right now, and then these disruptive technologies that are coming out, or disruptive trends. Some of these are not technologies, but, carbon in the enterprise, carbon reducing and green IT has just been kind of sputtering along for years, and it was kind of like a feel-good thing. Right. People kind of had a checklist, like, ooh, we're a green company, and then it kind of faded off because people didn't really care about it.
Right.
So now it bumped back up a lot from last year to this year. In terms of survey respondents saying they were going to spend money on this next
isn't
year.
It because, isn't it because it's become more efficient? I mean, companies can actually make money, or not maybe make money, but at least save real money.
It affects the bottom line.
Well,
this is business. This is the way business works.
Yep.
And so now, and then also, Pat Thibodeau has just written a couple great articles about this, this carbon tax is coming at some point, and the people who are, the companies who are really paying attention to this now are like, we need to get out out in front of this. I mean, a very large enterprise, you can't turn on a dime.
Right.
So you can't, you know, you can't say, oh, 3 months we're going to be energy efficient. So they're really starting to look at this as it's a bottom line impact. But also the technologies are in place now to make that happen. Mostly, you know, if you're moving to a new, you're getting rid of your data center, mm-hmm. you're moving to a co-location, you're going to look at the energy costs right. associated with that, and green energy, sourcing your energy mm-hmm. from, you know, we did that story about Iceland. You're sourcing right. your energy from, you know,
geothermal.
Yeah,
geothermal.
They have geothermal. They have wind. What's the other one? You know, they've got solar.
Hydroelectric.
And, yeah. So that really popped up. I mean, I think on this list we saw a lot of stuff that's been kind of like sputtering along, and right. all of a sudden it's finally kind of pulling together.
Right.
So DevOps was at the top of the list.
That's not a
something.
Surprise.
Yeah. You know, it's been kind of gathering for a bunch of years. I know among our readers we still have some skeptics.
Yeah.
You know, when we do DevOps right. articles, we have people kind of rolling their eyes, but people just need to move faster and be more nimble. Mm-hmm. And also, so the thing that it's interesting they pointed out is DevOps is not really a skill. It's not like you go out and get a certification in DevOps. Right. It's more a mindset.
It's about collaboration.
It's a mindset.
Right. Working together.
And, yeah. yeah. It's really a mindset change. And so it's, you can have your same old skills that you've had. It's just, you know, that sort of real fast and fluid and stand this thing up, get it going quickly. You know, fail, move on, just keep rolling, mm-hmm. as opposed to we're going to go over here for 6 or 12 months and right. come back with something that no longer makes sense. So part of it is just DevOps is just responding to this whole digital transformation. You just need to move faster.
Right.
And then actually that ties in with this focus on the customer experience.
I saw that. I mean, don't companies already take care of customer experience? I mean, aren't they focused on that already?
Well, this is
how
really...
How is that disruptive?
If they aren't, they don't last.
Well, you kind of wonder,
well,
you know?
Well, it's true, but actually, it's more that it's getting, you know, before there was like the customer service experience was at the front end of the business.
Right.
It was like out here. It was like, here's the person on the headset yeah. talking to Ken
and
he's trying
it.
To buy insurance.
And there's
or
a disconnect?
Yeah, and the back end was still all OG and all like, well, I'm working with a ERP and all this stuff. So it's really the fact that it's pushed all the way back through. So you're talking about enterprise IT,
okay.
which is not, you know, lots of times they're way over here. They don't even actually really have a sense of the actual customer.
Right.
But as the company transforms into a digital company, then it flows through everything.
Right.
So now the DevOps is the same kind of thing, internal, external customer. So now your customer experience is just, and the companies are really finding that that's their differentiator in the market is really, you just have to stay right next to mm-hmm. that customer the whole time. So like good. This example we use, which I thought was so cool, is like mortgages, which is a drag.
Oh yeah.
You need 10,000 million pieces of paper. Oh. There's all kinds of
right.
regulations.
You sign your life away whenever you do
so
that.
They yeah. have, you know, they've broken it down. This one company, Prime Lending, they've broken it down to a series of apps. So by the time, you know, you do a little bit here, a little bit there, by
wait,
the time
so the
you're
customer deals with separate apps?
Or? Yeah, so okay. they broke the process down yeah. into, you know, do this now. So by the time you're standing in the house, and you know what the housing market is right now, yeah. you're standing in a house you want to buy, you're in a bidding war, you can literally get your mortgage approved while you're standing there with your phone, right? So that's absolutely... You know, that's digitization
well, like that
of all
idea.
Of that paperwork, but it's also everybody has a phone in their pocket now, right? So
yep.
they're being driven by the customer, but they're being driven by the back end too. So that one's kind of, I mean, it doesn't
really
sound exciting, but it's
no,
really...
No, if you're buying a house, or anyone who's bought a house or dealt with a mortgage can appreciate, you know, an app on your phone that allows you to qualify right away or, you know... Give you
but qualifying is just a
that's the start.
No, this
now.
Is actually I think it's actually the approval. But obviously, you've done yeah. all the stuff beforehand.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, if someone bids up another 50,000, you're like, ooh, you know, we're
yeah.
right on the edge
yeah.
there. So now you have that information.
Bid wars on your phone for your house,
right?
And then you know, also related, we've been writing for a long time this IT market alignment. I mean, IT and marketing have not always been friends.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But if you have to be friends now. There's really just no way around it, and it's mostly because not so much in IT, but really marketing has just become completely digital.
Right.
So they're actually the suitor in this game, which is, you know, they can't go off on their own anymore because every single thing they do is now digitized and they need the analytics
right.
and they need all the stuff that IT can provide. So the happy companies, everybody's on the same page, but otherwise it's really marketing being like, you know, we need this and this from you guys right now. So that's one of those things that it's been, you know, some companies were doing it before others, but it's really if you're not doing it this year, you're going to be left behind.
Yeah, there's a lot of insights in that package, and in our next episode, I want to take a look at some of the predictions, you know, the bold predictions for 2016. But I think we should leave it there for now, and I think that's a wrap for us for today.
Cool.
We'll be back
All right.
soon.